Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. Last week, we had a tremendous champion on the show from the Sweet Science, and the show kind of got cut short. He forgot to charge his phone, so we thought it would be only fitting to bring him back on and have him back on the show with us, as we only got to tell the first half of his story. You know, Barry, when I look at the first half of the show with Tony the Tiger Lopez, it truly was a tremendous aspect, you know, the first half, because it really set the groundwork and gave the fans an inner thought of what the sport meant to him. What was your takeaway from the first episode we did with him?
Yeah, I think what we had touched on was basically his coming up in the game, maturing from a young fighter into a seasoned pro, and we were leading up right into his championship fight with Rocky Lockridge when Tony got excited and his phone went out. But we're gonna finish the rest of it tonight, and it'll definitely be awesome.
Most definitely. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and kick this show off.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
You gotta love it, man. It takes me back to the day. With that being said, and without further ado, Tony the Tiger Lopez, welcome to the program, champ.
Hey, thank you, buddy. Back again.
Hey, you know, I don't know what it is between us. Last time your phone died, today, for some reason, I call you and I can't hear you. You know, the internet's a tremendous thing. You know, we didn't know if we got you excited and you threw your phone or you were pissed and you stomped on it. We were like, we called you back. We got voicemail. We were like, oh, crap. But, you know, we kind of touched on where we left off. You know, I had asked you a question about looking back to that time, you know, with Pete Ranzani, Loretta Garza, Tony the Tiger Lopez, and others starting to vastly, you know, make a profound name and truly create a mecca for boxing in Sacramento, California. And, you know, how does it feel to be a pertinent part of the growth of the Sweet Science in the 916?
You know, to be honest speaking, I don't really look at it like that. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm a different dude, because I look at it as this is how I look at my boxing life. I like to fight. No, I love to fight. Ever since I was a kid, I didn't mind getting hit as long as I was able to hit you back. And, you know, getting hit hard didn't bother me. It's just something that I love. I happen to win 3 world titles doing something I love to do anyways. That's the way I look at it, you know. And it's great that people respect it. It's a big bonus. But to me, it's just, I just love doing what I do.
Yeah.
Although
you know,
I hate training. Don't get it wrong.
I think every fighter hates training, you know. I don't know. Sometimes, you know, I talked to Zach Cummings, a good friend of mine, the other day, and he had trained 3 times in one day and hadn't been able to eat and had no sleep, so he wasn't the most happiest fighter in the world. But Tony, looking at your career, you know, shortly after from the 916, there was a young kid by the name of Diego Chico Corrales that kind of came up on the sport, came up really quick. You know, what did it mean for someone like you to be able to, you know, actually give that young man knowledge on his way up?
You know, it's actually very comforting. I mean, you know, you also have this is also the area of Randall Garza, who was a WBA champion at the time. And now, for Sacramento being as small as it was back in the days, to have two world champions in one city was huge. You know, it was a big thing. And because Sacramento back then wasn't that big. You know, it was still a small, okay, maybe a little bit bigger than a cow town at that time. But, you know, basically still a cow town. And, you know, and then you have Diego Cross that came out of it. And, you know, then you had Willie Jordan. Who won a world title. I mean, man, Sacramento has produced some great fighters. You know, it really, really has. I remember as a kid, Sacramento was, to me, a boxing mecca because there was fights here all the time. And Monroe Brooks from back in the day, if you remember him. You know, you had some of the great fighters that came out of Sacramento and or around Sacramento. So I think Northern California has produced a lot of great fighters, you know.
Yeah, it's proving to be so also in the MMA world. You know, as of lately, you know, there's a lot of top competitors, a lot of top athletes coming out of there. You know, I'm going to toss to Mike to Barry because Barry's our guru. Barry, go ahead, my brother.
Hey, Tony, how are you tonight, bud?
Good, Barry. How's it going, man?
All right, man. It's good to have you back on again. Where we left off last time, we just got into the fights with Rocky Lockridge, and I wouldn't even say the knock, but it was like Tony Lopez. He got to fight in his backyard a lot in the early parts of his career. In the early parts of his career, and how big of an advantage was that for you, or did you see it as a disadvantage fighting in front of your hometown crowd, more pressure? How did you look at things like that?
You know, I didn't look at it as a plus or a minus. You know, the way I was told is, you know, money dictates where the fight's going to be. You know, and back when I was fighting, even before I was a champion, you know, the opponent was into the champion's town. You know, back in the day, that's how it was. Or mostly, anyways. Well, obviously, money always dictated where the fight's going to be. But mass majority of the time, it was in the champion's backyard. You know, I had no problem leaving, but they were paying me more money here in Sacramento. Why should I leave? You know, when I didn't have a title, I went down to Portland, Maine to go join and watch his backyard. Then got his title. You know, he was a champion. I didn't mind traveling. He's the one with the belt. He's the one I want to fight. So. You know, that's I got to go where he wants me to go, and you know that's why I've always looked at it.
Absolutely, and the fans can't really get in the ring and help you either once the bell rings. It's just two guys in there trading. But you mentioned Joey Gamache, and I kind of want to talk about that fight. It seemed like you know Joey came in; he was undefeated. He was. You know, he was a high, you know, kind of prospect. And you came in as the seasoned veteran at that point, but had fought the much better competition. And Joey kind of felt like he needed the win over you to kind of get the recognition he deserved. Take us into the lead-up to the fight with Joey Gamache.
You know, I didn't know too much about him. I'd seen him fight, obviously, before, and he was faster than crap, you know. I mean, he was fast. And but, you know, in boxing, most of the time, not 100% of the time, but most of the time, when you have speed like he has, you give up power. And when you have power, you give up speed. There's very few fighters have both, but there are some that do, you know, so... You know, I knew he was going to be fast, and going into the fight, I knew I was going to be whooped the first half of the fight. But I wasn't worried about that. I don't care. That didn't bother me. As long as I was there for the first half of the fight, the second half of the fight is where I need to pick up. You know, it's normally where I came on strong anyways. You know, the harder the fight, the better I got. You know, so, and that's kind of how we had to play it out. You know, I mean, you know, he's faster than me. He's sharp. He's good on his feet. He's a good fighter. He was a great fighter, you know, and so, you know, I walked in there knowing I'm going to get my butt kicked for the first six rounds. But okay, I can deal with that. You know, what's going to happen in the second half of the fight is what he's got to worry about. You know, and that's kind of how I go into the fight. It's the reality. You know, that's the reality of it.
Yeah, it seemed like as the fight went on, you kind of found the, you know, his jab. He kind of, you know, he was throwing it out there, but he wasn't bringing it back as fast. And he was throwing the right hand over top of it and started really, really putting the hurt on him to where he, it kind of seemed, was second-guessing what he was doing. And then you took, you know, full control of the fight and eventually, you know, knocked him out in front of his home crowd.
Yeah, you know, again, you know, and I always try to be grateful, grateful, I guess, for this. You know, win, lose, or draw, hey, man, you know, we both get in the fight, we put on a good fight, and, you know, today I won, you raise your hand, you don't act crazy, you don't, you know, you just raise your hand, hey, I won, thank you very much, you boo, yay, whatever, it doesn't matter, I still won. You know, and people were pretty respectful after that, you know. Even after the fight, there was, you know, obviously there were some boos. But, you know, when I went out to the crowd, man, you know, people were going, hey, man, you did a good job, good fight, you know, you won, fair and square, good job, you know. And I'd say 90% of the people said that, you know what I mean? So right. It's all about how you conduct yourself at the fight and before the fight, obviously. Before the fight, a little lip service is always welcome. I don't know if it's welcome, but, you know, people do it, you know. And,
right.
And you know, after the fight, as long as you're great, gracious after the fight, no matter how much lip service you gave before, as long as you're gracious afterwards, win, lose, or draw, hey, man, you know what? People understand that, you know?
Yeah, and go ahead, Don.
Oh, no, go ahead, Rose. You're on a roll.
Oh, no, he just mentioned the, you know, kind of the talking trash part, and that was leading me into one of the guys that used to talk a lot, and that was Greg Haugen. And you're about leading up with him. And I guess leading into the fight, Greg kind of had a broken nose and was sparring, you know, with a face mask on and things like that. Did you know that was happening or, you know, you just kind of.
No, yeah, you know, you know what's so funny is I like Greg. And you know, I really didn't know him back then. I watched him fight with Taz and all that stuff and all the smack talking that was going on back and forth. And I was like, oh, my goodness, you know, I'm not a big talk smacker. I mean, if you tick me off, I'll say something, you know. But if I say something, that means I mean it. But I'm not playing. I'm not talking smack to talk smack. If I say you keep on, I'm gonna sock you. It's because I'm gonna sock you. I'm not saying it to make the crowd go. Oh. I'm not doing it for that reason. You know what I mean? So I was never
right.
Really a big smack talker. But and I thought Greg Haugen was gonna lay it on me. But you know, that's part of the show. That was part of I think. But you know, so when we came up to it, he never really did it. You know, he was actually kind of nice to me. You know,
right.
And I mean, you know, talk more smack was him. More smack than him was Jorge Pais.
Right.
And he really didn't talk smack either. He just, you know, made funny about what he was going to win and how he was going to win. And but you know, hey, he's a fighter. That's what he's supposed to be. You can't go into a fight thinking you're going to lose. I mean, you know, shit, that wasn't enough. You know what I mean? So I don't
right.
know.
You know, but go ahead.
I kind of got a. It's just a. It's a question that's been bothering me since last. Well, not bothering me. It's just been on my thoughts since last week. You know, being that I do know certain aspects of Tony, you know, away from the ring. You know, back from years and years ago in Sacramento. You know, you said something on the show that truly kind of inspired me. You know, you said you're not a boxer, that you're just a fighter. And, you know, how hard was it for Tony Lopez to transition from the guy who fought on the street, the guy who wouldn't back down from anybody, how hard was it for you to transition into the fighter that had to maintain thought, maintain his perspective to last or even exist in the ring?
You know, it wasn't hard at all. You know, it was because you know what a lot of people don't know is I've been boxing since I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
I started at the age of 10, and I had a trainer back then that taught us so much that trainers don't even teach anymore. I'm training a fighter right now. I have a fighter right now. He's still an amateur. He's doing really, he's going to be an amateur for another year, I believe. When I turn pro, even now as an amateur, today, he can fight a southpaw, no problem. He can fight a right-hander, no problem. He can fight inside, and he can box. And he's faster than lightning, you know. And he hits me, and when he slows down, he hits like a rock. And at 125, 130 pounds, he's going to hurt people, you know. And because you give him all, you're supposed to give your fighter all the ammunition he would need. So when he comes back to that corner, I mean, you just, you know, like when Jerry, my trainer, Jerry, when I come back to the corner, he wouldn't really know what to say a whole lot. You know, do this, do that. Other than that, you're doing fine, breathe. You know, if you're messing up, he'd say, okay, look, when this is happening, you're doing this. Stop doing that. You know what to do. Do it this way. And he'd stop. You know, there wasn't really a whole lot of, so that transition from street fighting to boxing wasn't that hard because he was real calm. You know, even in the street fights, you know, I'm never really mad. You're always really calm. You know, I just fight because that's what you're supposed to do. I don't fight mad. You know, I never have. Even in street fights, you're not mad. You're just doing what you do. And you just transition that into boxing, which in boxing, you're not mad. You're just throwing punches. It's what you do, you know. And with throwing punches, there's also you got to give and got to take, you know. And, you know, like I tell people, I don't care how hard you hit. It's not how much you can give. It's how much can you take. You know, that's the real fight because everybody's going to get hit. And for some crazy reasons, and it started really young, I didn't mind getting hit. You know, it didn't bother me. You know, I'm not going to say I like getting hit. It didn't bother me. I wasn't going to go cry at home to mama. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just did it, you know.
And you truly did it with great fashion because it seemed, Barry was even talking about, as your fights went on, it seemed like the more on point you got. And I think it was something that was purely of heart. You know, Tony, we've had living legends on this show. We've had Hall of Famers. You know, and one thing that the relevancy of this next question is, I've been trying to get it into people's heads, trying to give them a better understanding, you know, these athletes in the sport today, you know, they truly don't understand or get how little, you know, money you guys walked away with back in the day and how little you truly got paid. You know, I can't remember exactly who it was, Barry, but I remember one fighter, I think, I'm not sure if it was Marlon Starling or Iran Barkley, but, you know, somebody said they had fought for $75 one time. And you look at this, you know, the sweet science, and you go back to your day, how much is there in pay differential, would you say, compared to when you came up compared to now?
Oh. Well, let's put it this way. I never had $1 million purse, you know. Let me be honest. And people tripped out when I tell them this, and but it's a fact, you know. Like I tell you, you always hear people talk smack about King and how big of a crook he is and blah, 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 blah. You know what? Let me tell you something. He's a straight businessman. And if you're a man about your business, you'll know what to do. And if you're a man about your business, you're going to make money. And you're going to make really good money with Don King. I know I did. I'm not mad. He paid me the most. As a matter of fact, at that time, you know, I had 5 fights with Don King. And he basically said, here's 5 contracts, and I've already signed them. I'll pay you X amount of money, up to X amount of money. You put down how much you want to make per fight. You didn't think I maxed out? I got every level red dime he told me to. He promised me. You know, because like he told me, it's a long story. It's crazy, and I won't take it because it's a long story, but it's a crazy story, but it's real. It's 100%. And you know what, man? When I had my fights here in Sacramento, when I performed my fights here in Sacramento, I did it the same way Don King did. You know, and what he did to me is he showed me what it was and what it was really, how it really felt to be a world champion, how someone treats a world champion. You know, everything he did with us was first class. You know, that was nice. You know, because a lot of the promoters, they go, oh, well, you know, I barely made any money, or I didn't make, man, be quiet. You made a ton of money, you know? And you know, how about Nick? I'm the one training and getting hit. How about paying me a little bit more money? You know what I mean? I never had that problem with King. You know, like I tell people, King was one of the best promoters I've ever had in my career. And, you know, if I was to do it all over again, I'd do it again. I'd fight for him again. He's that good. But, you know, you got to be a man about your business, you know? And, you know, boxing is a business, so that's what I conducted it like, you know? And just, you'll be surprised how many fighters don't. You know, you'll be shocked. You see all these great fighters, great names, and great champions, and you're going, that fool didn't bring an attorney? What was he thinking? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's really what it is, you know? And you know, I brought mine. You know, I got paid very well. Thank you. You know, I'm not mad. I never will be mad. As a matter of fact, I love Don King. Don King, can I go ahead and hug that man? I love you, bro. You know what I mean?
I ain't going to lie. That's probably one of the first few times that I've heard that.
Yeah. You know, because watch this. Here's what he told me. He said, Mr. Lopez, I see you're a man about your business. He was in this business. He was just like me. I'm in this business to make money. He was like you because you brought your attorney. You're a man who wants to make money in this business too. And here's the contract you can sign. He goes, I've already signed them all. Here, go ahead. And then he goes, go ahead and take them. My attorney asked if he can read them. Yeah, go ahead and read it. I want you to read it. Came back the next morning. Well, hey, what's up? He goes, man, sign all these contracts. I've maxed them out. Sign them. I'd sign them. Well, we were good. You know? Awesome. Love Don King. But, you know, you'll be surprised how many fighters get big-headed and think, oh, I'm champion of the world. Ain't nobody going to take nothing. Be quiet. Don King, like Don King said, it's a business. I'm here to make money. What businessman isn't? I'm just saying. You know?
True that. True that. Barry?
Yeah, I kind of want to, you know, you were talking about the back in the day. Nowadays, you see a fighter, you know, maybe 3 to 4 times a year. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, there were times you were fighting every 2-3 weeks. I mean, take us to, I guess, the fighter's mentality of your day to the fighter's mentality of today.
Well, watch this. It's watered down today. And let me tell you how it got watered down. And it started 20 years ago. It's when, and every town in the USA has it. You, and so it doesn't matter what town you're in or what city or state you're in, you have them. Here's what it is. I'm going to just shorten it up. You have a guy, you're training at the gym. The guy's dad goes to the gym, I don't know, twice a week. For 2 years, he's been going twice a week to the gym. The guy goes, you know, he closes the gym. He goes, well, I'm going to do it on my garage. Charge you. Nowadays, they charge $100 to $150 a month per person to train their gym in the garage, right? So the father comes in. He's going in about 2 or 3 months later. He's going, man, this guy's got 20 kids in here. He charged each kid $150. He started rattling off numbers. And he goes, holy crap. He goes, I could do this. So daddy goes, man, I'm not training fighters now. So he takes the fighters down. He opens up a gym in his house. He brings fighters over here. And guess what? Shockingly, because kids want to win fights so bad that they'll fight their little hearts out. And we do. And we want to win. So some fights they're going to win. And guess what? That fathers, or both them fathers, are going to develop champions. Because the kids want to win that bad. Because that's what kids do. That's what we all do as fighters. We fight till the end. And so guess what? Let's say the father makes a few champions. Now remember, father really didn't know much about boxing. But he's made a few champions. Now he's a great trainer in the neighborhood. And all the kids are coming to him. You know, and that's the problem, because the father does, like I just said a while ago, my fighter knows how to fight southpaw. He can fight southpaw. He can fight a southpaw. Let me tell you what, and taking nothing away from Manny Pacquiao, but let me tell you what Manny Pacquiao's biggest thing was. Nobody could fight a southpaw, because southpaws are just as easy to fight as right-handers if you know what you're doing. Now, when Pac-Man just got knocked out, and you know what? It's because all the stars and moons lined up that night. And he came in, and was it Marquez? Marquez, right? Marquez?
Yeah.
All the stars lined up. Marquez reacted to what he was supposed to do. Because Pac-Man always came in chin first. He came inside chin first. Well, when you fight a southpaw, your lead leg is on the outside of his lead leg. If it's on the inside, and you never go right for a right-hander, you never move right on the southpaw because you're going into his power hand, which is stupid, which all the world champions and or contenders did. Now, who in the hell was training those guys, right, to move into the champion's power hand? That's kind of dumb. So you put your leg on the outside, and you still move to your left, putting him in straight line for your power right hand. He's right in front of it. It's 10 inches, 20 inches away, 15 inches away from your power right hand is his chin. And he's moving to your left, he's moving into it, right? Because now he's got to move. Well, if you move to your left, he's got to move to his left, which puts him off. And takes you away from his power hand. How easy is that? But over how many champions, world champions, couldn't do it? Countless. That's embarrassing.
Oh, absolutely.
There's something wrong with boxing. The boxing is not a hard, you teach a fighter to react. Everybody goes, what made Muhammad Ali to me? What made Muhammad Ali so great is he can think, he can tear you, he'll tear you apart. And sending you to heaven because he studied fighters. He knew in the first four rounds your hands are as high as your cheekbones. But by the sixth, seventh, and eighth, by the fifth, sixth round, your hands are by your chest. And now he's going to start landing bombs because your arms are tired. That's what you call studying fighters. Now, who studied fighters anyway? Nobody. Not even me. But see, that's the difference in boxing back then, and that's the difference between boxing now. Is, like my fighter today can go fight a softball and beat a softball today. I'm telling this kid's a throwback to the fighters of the 70s and 80s. This kid can fight at 100. He's 125 pounds. On May 5th, he's going to fight in Reno for the first time with me. I'm telling you, he's going to shock a lot of people on May 5th in Reno. And it's an amateur fight. I think I'll keep him amateur for about a year, though,
give him a shout-out. What's the youngster's name?
Alex Miller. And he's got a name like Alex Miller, but he's from Guatemala. We'll figure that out.
Okay.
His dad was born here, and they live in Guatemala. His grandparents live here, so he's saying it's about it. Well, watch this. This is dedication. The kid lives in. So someone set up with this kid. I said, okay, let me see him. And then I see him. I said, okay, I'll train him. The kid comes from up the hill, between Sacramento and Reno. It's above Grass Valley. It's about a 2-hour drive, one way. It's a 2-hour drive back. He drives 4 hours every day to train. And he gets here and trains harder than any fighter I've ever trained in my life. I would say he almost trains as hard as me. I said almost.
Right,
almost. But the kid trains hard. And he does it every day religiously. That, my friend, is dedication.
Absolutely.
The days of dedication for fighters. Now, watch this. When I first turned pro, my first 3 years as a pro was Bobby Chone's last 3 years. That was his main sparring partner. How my day started at 4 a.m. I'd go to work at a brick manufacturing company, throw a brick around all day long. From 6 to 2:30, I'd get out at 2:30, go meet my trainer, Will, at Renfrew Field at the time. And then I would drive with both to Oroville, which is about 2 hours away from Sacramento. And I would drive with both to Bobby Chone's backyard in Oroville, and we'd do a full sparring, train the whole 9 yards in his backyard. We did it for a whole year. I never asked to be paid. I never mentioned it. He never offered. I didn't care. I was getting paid. I was getting boxing lessons, And the difference between the fighters today is back then, I didn't ask for a dime. I didn't expect a dime. My payment was sparring with Bobby. I got my butt beat every single day. My nose was 3 feet, 3 inches wide. My eyes were swollen. My lips were fat. I got beat up every single day, but I kept going back. I kept thinking, one day I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him one day. And, dude, I tell you right now, I had lumps on the back of my head, on the side of my head. I had to wear a mask, that headgear with the metals in it, because my face was so jacked up. They didn't want my face to split. For real, that's real tough. I came back every single day. Now, I didn't do it the first year, And there are some days on the second year we train a little bit closer, train another town a little bit closer the second year. And then Will, there was times when Will say, hey, you know, take it easy on Bobby today. And then, you know, I tell Will, oh, hell no. He didn't take it easy on me. I ain't taking it easy on him. And we went to war every single day. The third year we trained in Sacramento, and there was more days than not when Will say, hey, you know, take it easy today. Oh, hell no, I'm not. And we went to war every single day. Until the last day we trained, Bobby never took a step backwards. And people say, hey, where do you get your fighting style from? Where do you think I get it from? Bobby Chacon. Never take a step backwards. Don't need to take a step backwards. You just keep coming and punching.
Yeah. Now, some of my favorite fights are the more they're technical and they're more precision fights, like the Chavez Meldrick Taylor fight, James Toney and Vasily Girov, and more recently the Andre Ward and Kovalev fights. And I put your fight with Halgan, who we were talking about, in there because it was like the first three or four rounds, Halgan was, you know, he was using the double jab. He was, you know, you were starting off slow, and then, but you were working the body for later. And then about the fifth round, I think you caught him, and then, you know, you still kept the body work in, but you were starting to land, you know, your bombs. I think you landed like 53, 54, 55% of your punches that fight. But it was just such a precision, technical breakdown of a fighter of that caliber that it was one of my favorite fights to watch.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, and what people really don't understand, like, again, you know, like he, I remember him saying back then when we were fighting, you know, he goes, oh, I fought so-and-so, and I fought so-and-so, and Tony hasn't really fought anybody. I go, dude, I'm back there thinking, dude, you have no idea who I've been training with for like the first 3 years of my career. I got more training than you can ever get in a lifetime. Remember, Bobby Chacon was a two-time world champion, and I was just got on the block going, hey, I want to box. And that was my teacher, a two-time world champion from the gate opening was my teacher.
The funny part about that is Mancini was commentating that fight. So there's the tie-in to Bobby Chacon.
You know, there's a few fights. Let me say this: we're just talking about this today. Someone asked me, "Who would you want to fight in your time?" And there's a few fighters that got away from me that I really wanted to fight. It was just a different time when fighters, like, I wanted to fight. The money, for me at the time, the money was going to be there. I wasn't really worried about it. The money was going to be there. I wanted to fight the best. Not for the money, because the money was going to be there. I wanted to fight the best because I wanted to be the best. One of the fighters that I never got a chance to fight was Azuma Nelson. I really wanted to fight him. Oh, my God. I really wanted to fight him. He's one of them. Barry McGuigan was another one. He was another fighter that I wanted to fight. And there was one more. Oh, my God. I can't think of his name. That's what I get for having that one last fight. Let me see. That'll teach me.
Alfredo Gomez was there.
Yeah, but no, he wasn't. He wasn't one because Rafael Gomez was at the end. He fought that's who. Let's see, Loretto Garza. Did Loretto Garza beat him for the title? No. He beat Loretto Garza. Went to France and fought the Frenchman. He won the title over there. But Loretto Garza was from Sacramento. He fought Roberto
Benitez.
Gomez, right? Benitez.
Yeah.
No. It wasn't Benitez. It was Rafael Gomez. Right?
Okay.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. And I mean, Roberto Gomez was kind of at the end of his career, but he was still tough. No, I'm sorry. He beat Loretto. He caught Loretto with an overhand right. Because, you know, like people, like fighters, you know, you might slow down, but one thing you never lose is your punch. You know, once it's there, it's there. It ain't going nowhere. And that was a big fight here in Sacramento. You know, even Gomez was a tough dude, man. He was a bad dude, you know.
He fought Edwin Rosario too.
Oh, Edwin Rosario. There you go. Edwin Rosario, my bad. Edwin Rosario.
Okay.
You know, Tony, yeah, I want to jump in. I want to jump in real quick here because, you know, you did something that in the sport today is basically unheard of. You know, you started in 1988 with, you know, going in for the IBF with Rocky Lockridge, and then you defended it, I believe, four times in a row, and then you go in with one of the hardest-hitting punchers, considered one of the hardest-hitting punchers at the time, being Tyrone Jackson, and you came out with a TKO in that. How much of the buildup and the hype played into the camp of Tony Lopez, or was there any of that aspect at all? And once you actually got into the ring and the bell rung, did Tyrone Jackson truly hit the way a lot of the fighters stated he could?
You know, I thought Tyrone, no one ever hits light. You know, I don't care if he has no knockouts. He always has that chance to knock you out. Another thing that people don't watch, I'm explaining my answer first. To me, I've only had one fighter that ever hit me so hard, and I thought, oh, crap, I better drop this dude because he can get lucky. And I don't even remember that guy's name, but he came from Mexico. He was like 20-something and like 11. But all of his wins were by knockout. And you know, I didn't even think about that. But when he hit me in my arm the first time, I went, oh, crap, this guy can bang. I better get rid of this fool. So I jumped on him. I think I knocked him out like four or five rounds. But, dude, he was the only guy that ever make me go, you know, because I've always sparred heavy or bigger and heavier. When I was in the gym, I mean, you know, I sparred with guys that were weighing 180, 190, 160. And, you know, my thing was I trained really hard. I didn't play. You know, I had a good time training, and I would talk a little smack in between rounds, you know, when it was your break time. But I trained really hard, you know, and I sparred hard, and I hit the bank hard. And everything I did 100% to my ability. You know, now every day you're not 100%, obviously, but some days you're at 60. But I did 100% of that 60% if I had those days, you know. So to me, when you jump in the ring and you're already sparring guys that are weighing 180, 190, and you jump in the ring with a guy 130, guess what? You don't hit that hard no more. You know, I never really thought Chavez hit hard, you know. So to me, he just, you know, I mean, no. So again, nobody hits soft, but, you know, I, you know, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like he was a little Mike Tyson, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And I say that with respect for him because I like Tyrone, but I'm being honest, you know.
Yeah, Tyrone's a cool dude. You know, we've had him on the show. He's actually a pretty cool dude. He was bragging. He said everybody in that is, I believe he said everybody in Harlem was going to know who we were, but I could be wrong on that. You know, but what you did comparative in your career compared to most fighters nowadays, like Barry was talking about earlier, you know, sometimes you did fight, you know, 3-5 weeks after your last fight. How hard was it for a fighter of your caliber to maintain that durability? And do you think that the fighters nowadays could maintain that grit and grime aspect that you had to when you were a world champion?
I'm going to say no, but not just for the physical part of it. I don't think their bank accounts could do it because a tax man would kill them. So, you know, it's a different world today. You know, and I think, I don't know, man. I think money has a lot to do with the fight games changed so much too, you know. They could do it different, I guess, you know. Pay the loser an X amount, pay the winner a lot more, you know. Guess what? You're going to end up getting some really good fights because everybody wants to make money, you know. So, watch this. If you're fighting for a title and the winner's making $10 million and you're getting $3 million or $2 million or $1 million, guess what? You're still a millionaire. Does it really matter if you lose? You know what I mean? So, I mean, there's, I don't know. It's just, it's a different game today.
Yeah, I feel you there. You know, in the aspect that I'm kind of trying to get at, because we've had legend after legend after legend. So, you know, these, even though it looked great on paper what you made, that a lot of the times what people didn't realize was if you had a manager back in the day, they would get 33 1/3, and then they would get a quarterman's salary. And, you know, by the time that you actually seen what you were getting, you know, written down on paper, you know, the amount was half, if not less than half, that you received. Was that the situation for Tony the Tiger Lopez?
You know, my situation was pretty good, you know, because my dad was my manager. For a while there, my brother was my trainer, and I had my brother-in-law in my corner, you know, so I'd pay him, and I'd pay my brother-in-law. So it was a family affair for me, you know, so, I mean, I'm a little bit throw back to the old school. You know, if you make someone money, make your family money. You know what I mean? And that's why I didn't mind it. And ours, because we all made money. You know what I mean? So I probably got a little bit more than most fighters. Okay, I got a little bit more than, yeah, I did get a little more than most fighters. But because, I mean, you know, it's a business, and you got to be savvy with the business. You know, you just can't go there and go, yeah, let's do this, okay, and how are we going to put this? I don't know. You got to have some kind of plan, you know. So for all the young fighters that come out, remember, you're the show. As a fighter, today's fighters, you are the show. The minute you say it's over, guess what? Nobody gets paid anymore. So you make the rules. You're the one getting hit, not them. I don't care if it's your trainer, your manager. Remember, they're making money off your blood and tears. You see what I'm saying? So you make the rules. I know I made my rules. You know, and it's kind of hard making rules with your dad, but, you know, he had to agree on a lot of things. And sometimes he won, and sometimes I just shut up. You know what I mean? Because that's your dad. What are you really going to do, you know? But, you know, your dad has your best interest, or is supposed to have your best interest in you. You know what I mean? So, and my dad did. So, you know, we all did fairly well. And I can say with a clear conscience, I did probably pretty better than most fighters out there on their splits. So, yeah, it wasn't bad for me.
I love that. Barry?
Yeah, Tony, you know, like you said, we had mentioned earlier, the early part of your career, you kind of, you know, you stayed at home, but then the later part of your career, you traveled to, you know, South Africa, you traveled to Mexico to face, I mean, pretty much their god at that time. I mean, what was the atmosphere like in Mexico when you're getting ready to fight someone of that stature, held that highly, with that many people?
Well, you know what's so crazy is I didn't look at them like that, you know? You know, because remember, I'm a 3-time world champion. You know what I mean?
Right.
And shit, I really don't care about him. I'm there to whoop his butt no matter what. You know, and when we got to Mexico, and I thought, trust and believe, I was ready for all the crap talkers and, you know, people say talking smack and all that stuff. Well, I was ready for that. Cheers. But, you know, I'll tell you what, I got 50% of the people going, he's going to kick your butt. I had 50% of the people going, hey, kick his butt, you can do it, you know? And it was pretty even. And, he, you know, obviously that day, when you go out there, there's 80,000 people. And, you know, even you heard a few cheers. I mean, you know, because, you know, my dad's from Mexico. I mean, I have a lot of family in Mexico. And right. So, you know, I heard a few cheers. I heard a lot of boos, but I heard a few cheers too, though. You know what I mean? And, you know, people, it's kind of like, it's kind of like a Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson. What about the Buster Douglas have to lose? Nothing. What did Mike Tyson have to do? Have to lose everything. So who's the pressure on? Douglas or Mike? Mike, not Douglas. You know, because if Douglas loses, people expect him to lose.
Right.
When I went to Mexico to fight Chavez, you know, I walked into Mexico. I got off the plane. The first thing they said, you know, I speak Spanish, so they're talking to me in Spanish. They go, hey, what's going to happen on the fight? What's your plan? I go, hey, dude, look, check this out. I'm going to box for 10 rounds, and I'm not a boxer. At the time, my brother was training me. My brother was a really good boxer, right? And so he wanted me to box for 10 rounds, and we made an agreement that the last two rounds, championship rounds, I can go in there and go to war. And because that's what I wanted to do for 12 rounds. I wanted to go to war. And he goes, no, you know, we want to change our program. We're going to box for 10. I'm like, okay, whatever. So we, you know, so I got the plan. I said, look, man, I'm going to box for 10. And I'm going to knock him out in the championship rounds. I said, we're going to go to war. So I was there for 2 months in Mexico, training, doing all the stuff I got to do. And for 2 months, working on TV, radios, and you name it, I'm talking to people in the gym, hey, look, I'm going to box for 10. I'm going to take him out in the last two. So we get to the fight, right? The fight's happening. And I don't think I'm doing too bad, but I'm not really trying. I'm in Mexico. So I don't think I'm winning. I don't think I might be losing, but I'm not losing by much. And besides, to tell you the truth, I could really care less because I'm not there to win a decision. I'm not going to win a decision. It's just like an Africa. I'm not there to win a decision. If that man is still standing in the 10th round, I'm going to lose the fight no matter what. I understand that. So I'm in Mexico. If that man is still standing up after we go to war in the 11th and 12th round, if he's still standing, I didn't do my job. So if they called him the winner, I'm going to graciously bow out and leave because I didn't do my job. My job was there to take him on the last two rounds. So we're fighting. The fight's going on. Nothing's really going on. I got a small cut in the second round. I think it was into the second round. Small cut. Never got any bigger. Never did anything else. It was bleeding a little bit, but who cares? You know, I think I took two stitches to close the eye, my left eye. On my right eye, I had 12 stitches before. On the outside of my left eye, I had like 11 stitches. Never stopped the fight. Never even thought of stopping the fight. You know, I get two stitches in the fight in Mexico. In the 10th round, the referee pulls me to the side and says, you know, hey, come over here. You know, come to the doctor. I'm going, what? So I'm going, okay. So I go to the doctor. Doctor never gets on the ring, stays on the floor. Now I'm standing on the ring, so I'm, what, 10 feet tall, higher than he is? And he looks at me and he goes, oh, no, yes, sick, I will, yes, sick, I will. And I'm going, what do you mean? I go, let me finish, which means it's over. It's over. He's yelling, it's over, it's over. And so I'm telling the guy in Spanish, I'm going, dude, I go, let me finish this round. I go, if I don't lock you out this round, stop the fight and I'll leave and I'll never complain. He goes, oh, no, yes, it will, yes, it will. And so, you know, once he says it's over, too, I'm not going to sit and cry about it. You know, I'm not that guy. So they called the fight, it was over. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you can do that fight that people don't know about. And it doesn't really matter. Because, like the weigh-ins, he never made the weight. We don't know what he weighed. To this day, I'm telling you right now, as I sit here, I'm telling you, I don't know what he weighed. And another, one other truth, I really don't care. I don't care if he was 15 pounds over, 10 pounds over, 5 pounds. I could care less. Because at that name of the game, I don't care if he's 2 pounds or 20 pounds over. We're already here. You know what I mean? We're not beginners. We're veterans. And I don't really care if he's 20 pounds over. I could care less. What's going to happen is going to happen anyways. You know? Because that's what fighters do. I'm not worried about how much he really weighs. So if you can't really care, I don't really care. You know, I think it was 3 hours late to the weigh-ins trying to lose weight. You know, he never did it. You know, and the crazy part is, you know, my doctor was there. And there's a lot of stuff that happens in fights and before the fights and after the fights. A lot of people don't hear about or know about. Like him not ever hitting, making the weight. You know, my dad was getting ready to fight Jose Suleiman at the weigh-ins that day at the fight. Oh, my God, it was crazy. It was fun, though. It was a lot of fun. It was crazy. And you know, because he never made the weight. So my dad called Jose Suleiman. He goes, and they said, oh, yeah, 140. He goes, my dad's yelling, BS, BS. He didn't make it. You know, put him back on the scale. And he would not put him back on the scale. And then so my dad told Jose Suleiman, he goes, that's why nobody wants to fight for you because you're a cheater. Jose Suleiman takes off the shake. Oh, I'm a cheater. And he goes, yeah. And so they're getting ready to get into it. And Don King's in the background. And you can hear him in the background. It's funny. You can hear him in the background. He's going, he's just loving it. It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, dude, every news station around the world there, you know? And it was just so much life. It was alive, dude. It was just so much life there, I guess, you know, with all the people going off and My dad and Jose Soto won the fight, and the cameras are rolling. It was a great time for me, man. It was really cool. And then a lot of things happen during fights. You know, my doctor was in the dressing room after the fight was over. He went straight to the dressing room, starting to, because he'd sew me up right then and there in the dressing room, right? And because he was my doctor, he's a real doctor. He's my doctor. And so he goes back and goes to the dressing room right away. And, you know, Chavez talks first, and I talk second. Chavez gets done. He goes to the dressing room, and they're looking for a doctor. So my doctor comes out. They're yelling for a doctor. They knew he was a doctor, so they came and have him checked. And he can come down and check. They didn't stop the fight because of my eye. They stopped because he had two broken ribs. That's why they stopped the fight. This is a lot of stuff that people don't know, you know. But it's just one of those things that, hey, you know what? We know it. And that's all that really matters, I guess. You know, shit, my check cleared. You know, I can't be too mad. You know
right?
What I mean?
Exactly.
Because, that's boxing, though. You know, I mean, I've been doing it long enough. I'm not going to cry about it. I'll tell you what. When I went to South Africa, oh, my God, dude, beautiful. If you can, if anybody listening, if you ever get the chance to go to Sun City, South Africa, just right outside of Johannesburg, it's beautiful. Oh, my God. I've never been anywhere as beautiful as this place in my life. And I've been to some pretty cool places. And, you know, it's beautiful. And when we were there, we fought on site at Sun City. And back then, it was still apartheid, right? And, you know, I don't really get into apartheid. I was into my boxing. I was into apartheid. So we took a guy from Sacramento that was very political, and he knows about all that stuff, right? Because I didn't want to have to deal with that, you know, because I don't know anything about it. So, you know, I didn't want to deal with it. So so they said, yeah, you know, you better take somebody with you that knows, because you want him to talk for you. So, and I never thought about it. So as soon as we got the plane, sure enough, there's cameras in my face, Tony, and they wouldn't call me Mexican. For some reason, they would not call me Mexican. They call me, I'm a fine Italian boy. Well, I'm not Italian, I'm Mexican. Oh, good Italian boy. I'm not Italian. You're killing me. And so they put this camera in my face, and they go, so, Tony, what do you think about apartheid? And I'm going, don't ask me. So, you know, the guy pushes me aside, and he goes, oh, okay, here. You know, we came to fight for everybody. You know, we don't, you know, take sides of who you fight for. We fight for everybody, you know. And he just took over at that point. And they were pretty cool about it. You know, they were pretty respectful. And then, you know, and let's put it this way, Dingon Tabella was a tough fighter. And, you know, and even during that fight, the first half of the fight, it was a fight. And he came to fight, and I came to fight. Oh, let me tell you about this first. Dude, we came out, and you know, fighters come out to these, you're in Vegas, all these people have these big entourages coming out. Oh,
right.
That's nothing. Dude, they had an entourage for me that was, oh, my God. It went off like maybe 10 minutes. Before I came out, it was 10 minutes long. African dancers, and they're dancing. Oh, dude, it was so cool. I felt like King Tut coming out. Man. I felt really good. I felt, this is cool, you know? And this went on for 10 minutes. And they're in the ring dancing. I'm still waiting in the back. They're dancing in the ring. They're doing all their thing. And then, like, 10 minutes later, I come out. It was the neatest experience I've ever had in my life. It was really, really cool. And then the fight comes on. And you know, Dingon put up a good fight for the first six rounds. It was a really good fight. And then, you know, towards the end, I mean, all he had to do was stand up for 12. That's all he had to do was stand up for 12. And he was banging, and he just kept moving. He wouldn't fight anymore. He just kept moving. And every time we got close, I'd go to war. And then he just kept moving. At the end of the fight, and the reason why I don't feel bad about it, because my brother is my biggest critic. He just tells me like it is. You know, I'm not saying, you know, I don't know if that's the right word, if he's my biggest critic, but if you're doing something wrong or something, or if you lost or won, he'd tell you. Whether you wanted to hear it or not, he'd tell you, and he'd tell you the truth. So after the fight was over, you know, you can hear a pin drop. And so they're announcing the rings, and I'm going, they announced the first card, and they had, I don't even know what the hell they had happened. It was like an 8-round difference. And I'm going, I looked at my brother, I'm going, because he was in my corner, I'm going, are they giving me the fight? And my brother goes, no. He goes, man, he goes, let me tell you something. He goes, you won, but they're not going to give you the fight. And so the second guy read the scorecard. It was about the same thing, like 8-round difference. And then even my brother goes, then maybe they will give you the fight. Maybe they're going to give you the fight. Because there's no way in the world this kid beat me. There's no way in the world. And then they read the last, and you know, it's like in Sacramento when I beat Rocky Lockridge. From the first round, the first time they read a card, they knew I won. People were up cheering and the whole nine yards, right? They're screaming, hollering, throwing beer, they're doing all kinds of crazy stuff, right? Over here, you can hear a pin drop. They called out the short card, and there was no cheering, no clapping. Everybody was just like sitting there with their eyes wide open going, oh, crap. And then, I believe they said, I didn't notice, they said, like, I think in the 8th round, they sent out the guards, the National Guards people. They were around the ring above. They thought there was going to be a riot because I was winning. So they thought there was going to be a riot. So they brought out all the Army guys. They had the submachine guns. And they had the riot helicopters outside. It was crazy. But people were really cool. I mean, nobody did anything. And then when they caught the last card, and they said, and the winner, and new, I'm going, what the hell? And then they called out Ding Dong the Bell. People just got up and started cheering out like crazy. I'm going, oh, that's jacked up. Okay. Well, you know, here's the reality. Let's just hope the check cashes, you know? And it did. So, you know, but, hey, it is what it is. You know what I mean? And but I'll tell you what. If I could do it again, would I go back? Oh, yeah. In a heartbeat. You know what I mean? It was an awesome, awesome trip.
Before Don jumps in, I just want to say, when you started that story with the most beautiful, I thought you were going to say women on the planet, and then you started talking about the country.
Oh, no, dude. Trust and believe.
But,
them too. Without a doubt. Oh, my God. But, you just, it's like, no, it's not even like Hollywood. Beautiful women everywhere.
You know, you tell such a tremendous story. You know, you tell a tremendous story about those days. But how disappointing was it for you, Tony, not to get the three-peat? Do you think it was that the fear or the certain aspect that Ding Dong, they both knew that he couldn't go out a third time with you and withstand the time or the test of the waters? What do you think held you from getting that three-peat with him for the WBC?
You know, I don't know. And I never really thought about it. But you know what? It's not like I really cared. It's not like I didn't care. I shouldn't say like that. I did care. But you know what? Remember, man, you know, this is fun for me, dude. You know, it was never really a job. It became a job, and the end of my career became a job. You know, and I didn't have fun. I wasn't having fun anymore. And that's why it was the end of my career, and that's why my career ended. But at that time, I was having a dude. I'm 20-something years old, maybe early 30s, 30, 29, 30, 31. And I'm living, dude, I'm having a ball. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't know. To me, as long as the fun didn't stop, why would I? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Let's
go find another belt to take, you know?
And that you took plenty. You know, Tony, sometimes I like to ask fighters, because you guys are the only ones that truly know. If you look back over your shoulder throughout your whole career, and I know it's going to be kind of hard to do, but if you had to take maybe one, two, or three of your top most memorable fights, which would those fights be?
Two of them. The first Lockridge fight, without a doubt. And the third Molina fight, without a doubt.
You know,
two tough fights. Two very different types of fighters. Two very, very different types of stories. But on the same level, equal with each other on toughness and excitement.
Yeah. Most definitely. You know, the sweet science has a way of encapturing people and bringing them in. You know, we talked about this on the first episode. You know, I remember when I was a kid and I couldn't wait for, you know, Sundays for Wide World of Sports and Howard Cosell. And, you know, I just couldn't wait for those moments, you know, because to me, the sport meant something. And then as I got older and I grew into shooting the sport, you know, I was totally in love with it. But now I look at the sweet science and, you know, there's been a major change in the sport. You know, I've talked to a lot of legends. They say that the sport is lacking a true heavyweight. Mm-hmm. And then you look at a lot of aspects of the sport that are gone from the past. You know, hell, you can even ask some of the new fighters that are in the sport today about some of the, you know, the older grit and grind fighters that created the pathway for them. And they don't even know who you're talking about. So how hard is it for Tony Lopez to maintain the stature of what he competed and achieved in the sport?
You know, I guess on a local level, in Sacramento, you know, around boxing and boxing fans, I guess true boxing fans will always know who you are. Even some of the new, usually some of the new ones, the ones that really like boxing, you know, will still know who you are. I've ran into quite a few young kids that go, "Hey, you're Tony Sacalopez." I'm going, "How do you know? You weren't even born," you know. But there's some true fight fans, you know. I don't know, man. Like I hang out with, remember Daniel Red Lopez from back in the day, 70s?
Yeah,
Yeah, you know, I talk to him every once in a while. And, you know, I talk to lots of the old fighters from back in the day, like in the 70s. And, you know, and you think, I don't even know how to even put that. I mean, their era was 10 times tougher than mine. You know what I mean? They fought because they just liked fighting themselves too. You know, the paydays back then, I guess, was okay for them. It was bad for my time, and it's embarrassment to this time. But the fighters don't fight half as hard anymore. You know? And I don't know, man. It's just, I don't know. You know?
Well, you know, before I toss it to Barry, you know, and Barry, I'll ask you a couple more, and then I'll come back and we'll wrap things up because this is the second show we've had you on. I don't want to take too much of your time. But I miss the aspect of, you know, true competitors of the sport. You know, I shoot both aspects still in my path in life, and I just don't see, and I think Virgil Hill said it the best, and it's an honor that you're training fighters and he's training fighters, because he said, when I asked him about all of his accolades in life, he said, "None of that means anything to me." He goes, "The greatest gift I received from my career is being able to teach the youth a proper way to, you know, throw a jab, a proper way to throw a punch, to teach them the art and the artistry of the sweet science." Would you say that is the same reason why Tony Lopez is giving his knowledge to the youth of our country in this sport?
I don't know. You know why I do it for me? I really don't know. Because the guy comes in, watch. Honestly, it's what I've done for, I'm 55. So it's what I've done for 45 years. You know, old school, new school, yesterday's school, and the future school. You know, boxing is not a hard sport to learn. There's only so many punches. There's only so many ways defensive to have defense against those punches. There's only so many combinations you can throw. So many ways to respond against a punch. I can't think of the word right now. So there's only, boxing is not a hard sport. It's like I'm teaching my fighter. I'm not trying to teach you to remember everything. What I'm trying to teach you is to react to everything. You know, if a guy blinks, react to it. You know, if his hands move a centimeter, react to it. If his head moves a different way, react to it. I'm teaching him to react, not teaching him to think. You know, honestly, when I was fighting, I could tell you a thousand times, oh, yeah, you know, I seen him do this in the third round, so I had to wait till the fourth round to get rid of that. That's a lie. You know what? He did. He made a move, and I reacted to it. That's what happened. You want to call it luck, call it what you will, because that's what I trained for. So, but if you want to call it luck, call it what you want. That's what really happens, you know?
Right.
And so, I don't know. So, it's just, that's my expert. If I'm going to pass something down to the fighter that I'm training now, I'm passing down his reaction time. Just not really think about what you're doing, just react to it. Think in the gym, in a fight, react. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
do it a million times do you get it. You know? Because I'll tell you what, to be honest, ask me how many times I thought of crazy stuff in a fight. I thought of anything else but the fight when I was fighting. You know, sometimes you don't remember thinking of anything. But if you made a move, I reacted to it. You know? Guy faked a jab, I did something. If he slipped, I reacted. If he threw a punch, I reacted. If was it defensively or offensively, I reacted. That's how you train a fighter. You don't train a fighter to think. Who's really going to think? Especially in today's world, who really wants to think? You know what I mean? And that's the truth. That's really how it is. It was for me, anyways.
I like that because it's, you know, as a photographer, I mean, we get our best shots on looking through the lens and just looking for the slightest reaction to hit our button.
Right.
And so, you know, a fighter would be the same way. You know, we're basically in there with you. We're just not feeling the pain, but we're reacting off of their reaction. So I get that, and that makes a lot of sense.
Exactly.
Barry, I'm going to hand it to you. Go ahead, and we'll let you ask the champ two or three more questions, and then I'll go ahead and wrap things up, my brother.
Yeah. I was watching, I don't know if you've ever watched it, but Ray Mancini did a documentary called The Good Son about his fight with Dooku Kim. And he flew Kim's son over, and they were talking, and he said something to his son that I thought was like, I don't know, it just kind of hit me like, man, that is like, that's crazy. But as a fighter, I think you'll be able to relate to it, and I want your opinion. He told his son, you know, he said, I only met your dad, like, at the press conference and the weigh-in and then in the ring. He said, but I knew your dad better than anybody else in the world because I knew what was inside. And I was like, man, that is, like, deep. Because, you know, because you're given, you know, you're given everything you have. And, you know,
right.
Dooku Kim gave his life for that. So,
right.
I mean, what's your opinion on that, kind of that statement where, you know, you get to know your opponent better than really anybody else ever is going to?
You know, each fighter is different. On my standpoint, I didn't really care. I know that after hearing what you just said and what I just said, sounds really cold.
Right.
But I didn't. You know, when I entered the ring, me and you were fighting. And let's say, okay, let's do this. Molina. John Molina. Great boxer. Could outbox me 9 days out of 10. I might get lucky one day. You know? But I tell you what, he can't outfight me. But he can outbox me. So the third fight, I had to get him out of his boxing thing and into a fight. I did it. You know? So
right.
In saying that, you know, I don't really care. Man, it sounds kind of cold. I'm trying to say it so it doesn't sound so cold.
You didn't
yeah,
take
for real.
That
after
first,
that
first
anything I say is going to sound cold. Uh-huh.
Right. I think you didn't really want to get to know them on that level, I guess, a personal level. You guys are just business partners.
Right. We're there to do a job. He's there to kick my butt. I'm there to kick his. And guess what? I'll be better at my job than he is. That's really how I thought about it.
That's a little less cold. That's a little less cold right there. But, okay, my last question, and I was told to ask you this, and it was I thought it was funny. You'll laugh. But our buddy Mike Knight, he says that that Tony Lopez, he says Tony Lopez stole, in quotations, his left hook. He said, you mimicked the left hook from him.
I did?
That's what he says. He says, you took his left hook. He said, watch how I throw it and watch how Tony throws it. He took my left hook.
How old is
now,
he?
Mike is 50-some years old. I don't know.
Is he older than 55?
I have no idea. I really don't.
If he's older than 55, if he's older than 55, here's my response to his. If he's older than 55, I took it from him. Well, I borrowed it from him, and I sent him for it. If he's younger than 55, tell him, hell no, you stole mine, I want it back. So it's either or.
I love it. That's just tremendous. You know, it's funny. You know, it's funny to be able to correlate. Whoops, drop some stuff, and the mic picks everything up. But, you know, it's tremendous to be able to have a three-time world champion and a person from my past come on and share their stories and their experiences. There's a fighter there in Sacramento that I'd like to get your thoughts on. He's currently on the rise, and you've trained with him before. You know, this gentleman is Blake the Beast McKernan. You know, coming as a three-time world champion, what are your thoughts on that aspect of the sport of Sacramento's next generation in the boxing world through Blake McKernan?
With him, I think he has potential. Not every fighter has potential, trust me. I think he has potential. I think he has a lot of work ahead of him, but he has potential. Now, does he live up to that potential? I don't know. You know, that's on him. You know, so that's the reality of boxing. You can be a good fighter, doesn't mean you're going to be a great fighter. Doesn't mean you're not going to be a world champion. You know what I mean? So it's up to that person to do what he needs to do to improve himself. Like, I like Blake, you know? But will he ever be a world champion? I don't know. Am I saying that he'll never be one? No, I'm not saying that. Not at all. What I'm saying is, I really don't know. You know, because I don't know. I know his training habits. I trained him for a while. You know, and again, I train old school, and either work your butt off, or I ain't got time. You know what I mean? So only he can decide how far he wants to go. I think he has what it takes to do it, but will he? I don't know.
Now, one more kind of quick question about Blake. Do you think that he got started too late in the game? Is you know, he just turned 31. You know, that was my same sentiments. You know, I've interviewed Blake before. I know Blake quite well, you know, and that's the only hindrance I can see, you know, on the young man's career is, you know, at 31 years of age, only being your eighth pro fight in, it's kind of a little late in the game. But, you know, hey, I've seen fighters fight a whole hip in their 40s, so, you know, you never know nowadays. You know, Tony?
Well, you know, the fight game has changed, my man. It really has.
Yeah, it's truly changed quite a bit. You know, I miss the days of old, you know, the same as I do in life. You know, I used to preach about the good old days on my show with these young fighters, and then I finally realized that there is no more good old days. These are days that these fighters will never see. And so I try to change up the complexity of the knowledge that I give to these younger fighters because, you know, I can only give them knowledge. They can't see the knowledge that you and I grew up with. And, you know, it's horrible to see where life has gone, where the sport has gone. You know, I love the sport. I always will to the day I die. I mean, that's how I dedicated my life to this sport. But,
right.
You know, when you look at Tony the Tiger Lopez, and I kind of want to end on this note, you come from a boxing family, your father, your brother, you just come from a hell of a pedigree.
My mom.
How hard was it on your mother to be able to overcome, you know, all this aspect of her family being in such a dominating sport?
You know, I've heard her answer that question before. And she always said, I never got used to it. She goes, but I would never miss a fight. She goes, I never got used to it. She said, I didn't like it, but I never miss a fight. That was mom's.
Yeah. Right. You know, and the one thing I do miss the old days in Sacramento. You know, the Midwest has kind of been my home for 21 years now. So, you know, the 916 is kind of just a tremendous memory in my heart. The younger years of my life, you, Loretta Garza, Pete Ranzani, and a lot of the people in the sport truly formed and encapsulated in my heart what I know I needed to do in this business. And you're a tremendous reason of why I love the sport of boxing.
Yeah.
You know, what
okay,
you gave...
Thank you.
Well, it's real, Holmes. You know, what you did in the cage, not the cage, in the ring was tremendous. And to hear you on my show speak and tell your stories, you know, you can tell they're true, they're from the heart, and you don't hold nothing back. And that's a tremendous attribute to you. You know, I know Barry is, but I'll just speak for myself, and then I'll hand the mic to Barry. It was truly an honor for me to have you on my show and let you tell your stories to my listeners and to the world, because you truly do deserve it. And I think that leaving that legacy for the Lopez family was a tremendous honor that you did with Sal, yourself, your father. You just don't see that happen in life very much anymore. So I'm truly honored that you came on my show for a second time in such a short notice. It means a lot to me. I'm going to pass the mic to Barry. Barry, if you want to say your farewells to Tony or anything you want to add to the show, the floor is yours, homie.
Yeah, Tony, I appreciate your time, man. I appreciate you coming on a second time to tell us about your career and reminisce with us. Like I said, I grew up watching you. And it's always a pleasure to, you know, get to talk to some of my boxing heroes and, you know, find out the ins and outs of, you know, what was going on during the fights. It's definitely a much respect to you, and thank you for the memories. And I also want to say thank you for helping the up-and-comers that are coming up. And to the young man, May the 5th, good luck. And you got a tough man in your corner.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
you know,
that was probably the nicest goodbyes I've ever heard in my life.
This is
going down about, but that was very nice,
Joe.
That was really cool. Thank you.
Hey, no problem, man. I appreciate
it, brother. Hey, you know, Tony, what we like to do at the end of every show, because somebody always has something to say before they gracefully, you know, leave the radio episode. I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. If there's anything you want to add to the show, any friends or any family you want to give a shout-out to, any social media sites, or just anything that you would like to say, the floor is yours, champ.
Thank you, buddy. If I'm going to say something to New York Boxing Hall of Fame, I'm waiting. That's it.
Yeah, Matt Farrago, you better push up that. You know, it's true, because... I know the people you're talking about, and me and Barry have had them on our show. You know, we've had most of the board members on the show, so, you know, that's something that needs to be done, you know. I believe you need to be in the Hall of Fame. Your record speaks for it. Your honor speaks for it. And your ability has truly shown the world that it deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. On that note, Tony, God bless you for joining the show, brother.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it, man. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
You too.
Have a good night, brother.
All right, but you too. Bye-bye.
Man, I'll tell you what. He said it like it was, bro.
Well, absolutely. That's I'd expect nothing less.
You know, and I like the way, you know, I felt your question and the sentiment that you expressed and what Mancini said to Kim Sutt was tremendous. But I like the respect level that Tony took a step back and put it into the way he truly represents himself in the ring without any disrespect, you know, to any fighters. You know, it's kind of cool because, you know, this is a part of my life. This was something that, as a young man, that, it happened right in front of me. You know, I'm right there with, which, you know, Loretta Garza ended up being a world champion. Tony the Tiger Lopez, Pete Ranzani. And then I ended up becoming really, really tight with Diego Chiquarellis because I'm like 3 years younger than Tony. And so, you know, it was an opportune time in my life to really absorb the sport, and it meant a lot because Sacramento truly grew at that point with boxing. You know, Tony talks about, you know, even when he was a kid, boxing was a tremendous attribute to the city, but it really didn't grow until, you know, those four truly came up into the sport, and it changed the scene forever. You know, I look at Sweet Science, and, you know, even though I do MMA and Muay Thai and all the other genres, to me, there's never going to be more of a love for a sport than I have for boxing. You know, when I first met you, you know, we started off doing a show we had never met before. We just met on the show for the first time multiple years ago. And, you know, when I finally got to know you and realized the knowledge that you truly had as a young man, it's tremendous. And it showed me that not only do you love the sport, know the sport, but you walk the sport. And that's something that you truly don't get in a mutual host nowadays. So on that note, I want to thank you for having the ability to bring out some of these stories that otherwise wouldn't be shared with the listeners because you know it, you know, like a damn book. And, you know, I think that's to be commended, man. And I'm honored that you do the show each and every time we have a tremendous fighter on.
Yeah, like I said, it's definitely like a highlight of my week. I mean, you do all the legwork, man. You get the guests, you talk to them, and I know you try to get me to do it, but I'm a recluse like that. I like to just show up and do the talking, but that's more appreciated than you know. And you know, like I said, we work well together, we gel well together, and you know, you hit the life aspects, I hit the fight aspects, so we cover it all.
Yeah, you know, and I love his statement at the end when I brought up his mother. She said, "I'm not gonna miss a fight. I don't like it, but what are you gonna do when your husband's a fighter and both of your sons are fighters?" You know, it's kind of a hard place to be as a mom. You know, at that point you just kind of gotta accept it.
Right.
You know, it's really a trip. You know, because you go back and you look at Tony's career before we get off here. You look at his career and the IBF and all the other organizations that he fought in, you know, he always had three-peats. He always got that belt back. And going back to, you know, the Dagon Theobald fight, you know, he only fought twice for the WBC, if I'm correct. And, you know, he beat him the first time. He lost to him in Sun City, Africa, the second time. You know, and it's like, you know, it's got to be haunting him in some way that he never got that three-peat with him. You know, he kind of let on a little bit that he wanted that fight, but then again he said, you know, I was just trying to make the money. But, you know, I don't think some fighters will ever admit to anything all the time. But, you know, looking at the sport the way you love it and looking at his career, would you have not wanted that three-peat with Dagon Theobald?
Well, I mean, any true champion wants a crack at the title. I mean, they want the belt not only for the fight, but they also, you get, you know, when you fight for a title, like Tony will tell you, that check's a little bigger. So you make more money when you fight for the title. So, you know, of course you want that title fight. Absolutely.
Most definitely. Well, you know, I'm going to toss the mic to you, Barry, real quick. Anything you want to add before I do the sponsor shout-outs and we get out of here, my brother?
Yeah, I want to thank the listeners tonight. I want to thank Tony for, you know, giving us his time tonight. He went over. He went above and beyond. Much respect to him. And much respect to you, man. Always have fun with you on Thursdays. Or, well, today's Tuesday, so, you know.
Well, we usually do boxing on Thursdays,
right.
Only Thursdays, but we had to set MMA to the side tonight. On that note, I want to thank Finished MMA, Juan Martinez. Without you, the show truly wouldn't happen. The 86ers.net, Alfred and Freddie, thanks for having my back, truly having my back. Looking forward to going to Bone Thugs and Harmony on April 26th, representing the 86er.net family. I want to thank Bite Me Mouth Guards, you know, truly one of the best mouth guards in the business. And I want to thank our newest sponsor and our last sponsor that I'm going to be adding to the program, a legend himself in the sport, Jacob Stitch Duran with Cut Man for Hire. You know, truly the best, you know, in the business. So why would you want to buy your product anywhere else when you get it from a man that everybody truly epitomizes in the sweet science and in MMA? You know, so go to cutmanforhire.com, get your supplies there. They got everything you need all in one stop. You know, Barry, I want to just tell you I appreciate you, man. I want to tell you I look forward to not this Thursday, but the following Thursday, because we will be taking this week off, as Barry's going to be going on a road trip without me this time.
Hopefully
it doesn't snow.
But if it snows, you know, I'm coming down your way May something or other, so I'll be with you if it snows.
That sounds good to me, my brother. On that note, I'm Don McGuire, being joined by my mutual host, Mr. Barry Frost. Each and every one of you have a tremendous evening. On that note, we're going to take you out with a little bit of a sponsor advertisement. You have a good night. God bless.
What up, it's your boy Slone Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'm going to ask you this, though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout-out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
I'm in the booth. I'm in the booth. Say something on the mic. Booth. Say something heavy.
Oh, yo, that's what I'm talking about. My young boy up in the booth. He getting ready to kick it live.
Go! Whip for him, I get deported. Fish me alive, less than anointed. Broke this at 111, recorded.
Great.
Clock struck 12, bank on Warner.
Bang.
Might sound with Stoney just for some stock, nigga. Still independent, been in the lot, nigga. Cream on the seats, cream of the crop, nigga. Had to wait for the heat, then with the yacht,
nigga.
Talk overseas, no Portuguese. I made kiss on the sleeve, my